Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Tertiary Phase.
Coincidence is a subject upon which The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is dismissive. This is unsurprising because a universe of such infinite possibility, and indeed a fair degree of improbability, is a virtually limitless playground for the laws of cause and effect. Consequently, the strangest things can, and more often than not do, happen. And thus the legal department of the Megadodo Publishing Corporation has slipped in a caveat to the effect that a publication which relies so heavily on unsolicited contributions from strangers who wander into the editorial department during its near-permanent lunch hour is not in a position to verify the claims made in all or any of its articles. So on your own heads be it. Thus it seems that the game known as cricket, with a C, played on Earth in the last three or four centuries before its destruction, was not unconnected to a series of interplanetary wars fought 10 billion years previously on the opposite side of the galaxy. Certainly, the trophy known as the Ashes was a vital part of that distant and unfinished story, which is why the Ashes are still wrapped in a grubby handkerchief in the pocket of Arthur Dent's even grubbier dressing gown, as he waits with Ford Prefect and Slarty Bartfast for death or deliverance on the surface of the planet Cricket, with a K. It is at this point that the discomfort caused by gripping a heavy firearm is no longer something that Arthur can keep to himself.
Ford, this gun's giving me cramp. It's not as if we stand a chance when these people decide to rush us.
Yeah, well, we can take a few of them with us if they do. I'd love to wipe those vapid smiles off a few faces.
Patience, patience. Trillian is negotiating with their leaders, and Beeblebrox is up there somewhere. He may have a plan of his own. Comrades, there is still hope that the universe can be saved. Not much of one, though, I have to say.
And for this we're relying on Zaphod. Sucking fartworks, I need a drink.
Would you like a glass of water, brother, before we kill you? I will
fetch. Maybe later. Thanks. Keep back.
According to the Vogon Companion to Modern Intergalactic Hostility, the region of the galaxy in which our protagonists find themselves has had a history of violence longer than an immortal's memory. Children still shiver open-mouthed at tales of Haktar, the vast space-borne computer who designed a bomb capable of destroying the universe in one huge supernova, and of the hostile people of Cricket, but enough of them has been discussed in earlier editions. That was then, this is now. Zaphod Beeblebrox has discovered the Cricket with a K, Commanders with a C, possess the supernova bomb of legend and are intending, reluctantly but firmly, to use it. He has also discovered that the Cricket War robots have begun to suffer bouts of unexplained depression, and this, as he will undoubtedly also discover, is no coincidence.
Now I lay me down to sleep, try to count electric sheep.
Marvin?
Sweet dream wishes you can keep. How I hate.
Marvin! You moody metal mutant! It's me!
I might have known. Just don't globber at me.
Hey?
The Hitchhiker's Guide describes globbering as the noise made by a live, swamp-dwelling mattress that is deeply moved by a story of personal tragedy. The word can also, according to the ultra-complete Maxi Megalon Dictionary of Every Language Ever, mean the noise made by the Lord High Sandbalag of Hollop on discovering that he's forgotten his wife's birthday for the second year running. Since there was only ever one Lord High Sandbalag of Hollop and he never married, the word is only ever used in a negative or speculative sense. And there is an ever-increasing body of opinion which holds that the ultra-complete Maxi Megalon Dictionary is not worth the fleet of lorries it takes to cart its micro-stored edition around in. Strangely enough, the dictionary omits the word floopily, which simply means in the manner of something which is floopy.
Hey, great to see you, kid. High 15. Oh, hey, was that you singing so floopily?
I'm in particularly scintillating form at the moment.
You're alone, then.
Pain and misery are my only companions. And vast intelligence, of course. And infinite sorrow, come to think of it, which I will long before you.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, where do you fit into all this?
Through this interface to these electrodes here, the cricket robots which salvaged me from the mattress swamps of Squawn Shell Zeta recognized my gigantic intelligence and the use to which I could put it. My brain has been harnessed to the central intelligence core of the cricket war computer.
You okay with that?
I'm not enjoying the experience, and neither is the computer.
I think I know how it feels.
Of course, the mere coordination of an entire planet's military strategy is taking up only a tiny part of my formidable mind. The rest of me has become extremely bored, so I have taken to composing short, dolorous ditties and saving your life.
You're the reason the robots didn't kill me? Both times?
Well, three times now.
What?
Intruder! Kill on sight!
Whoa! Hold it, dude! You don't want to start shooting me!
I know. I'm far too depressed to pull the trigger now.
Marlin! Was that you?
Why stop now, just when I'm hating it?
You must have a terrific outlook on life.
Don't talk to me about outlooks.
Hey, stay cool, baby. You're doing a great job.
Which means, I suppose, that you're not going to release me or anything like that.
Kid, you know I'd love to. But you're working so well. I gotta find Trillian and the guys. Any ideas? I mean, I got a whole planet to choose from. Could take a while.
They are very close. You can monitor them from here. Watch the screen.
So you have been totally manipulated.
Where's that?
The council chamber of the elders of cricket.
Just think about it.
Your friend has minutes to talk them out of unleashing the bomb.
Your history is just a series of freakishly improbable events. And having served my time on the Heart of Gold, I know an improbable event when it materializes a 6-foot stuffed pink aubergine in my shower cubicle. Your complete isolation from the galaxy was freakish for a start. Right out on the very edge, with a dust cloud around you. Then this spaceship that crash-landed on your planet. Oh, that's really likely, isn't it?
Alien female. Although it is very kind of you.
What are the odds against it intersecting perfectly with the orbit of the one planet in the galaxy that would be totally traumatized to learn that it wasn't alone? It's a setup. The spaceship was just a cleverly made fake.
She's right. I've seen it. It's a fake.
How depressingly predictable.
Someone was feeding you what you needed to know.
But we didn't.
Of course you didn't realize it was going on. This is exactly my point. You never realized anything at all, like this supernova bomb.
How do you know about that?
I used scientific deduction, which is more than you have done. If you were bright enough to invent something that brilliant, you'd have worked out that it would take you with it as well.
What is this bomb thing anyway?
The supernova bomb. It's a very small bomb.
Yeah?
That could destroy the universe if activated. Good idea, if you ask me.
So where is it?
On the pillar standing between the elders and Trillian. Top of the screen. On command, the cricket robot next to Trillian will detonate it with his war club.
Dumb stupid, that I doubt, I very much doubt, that you've been able to build the bomb properly without any help from Haktar for the last 5 years.
Who's this Haktar guy?
The brains of the outfit. I feel sorry for him already.
Young lady, you have had your say in this matter. But as an alien life form, your deductions are ineluctably flawed. We have no alternative, therefore, but to carry out our plans.
No!
Robot, do your duty.
Marvin!
Nothing I can do. The robot's on an independent circuit.
detonate the bomb.
Detonate the bomb.
Wait!
Wait.
Waiting.
You're very different from the people you rule on the ground. You've spent all your lives up here, where the atmosphere is thinner. You're more vulnerable to influences from beyond. Radiation, dust particles. The people don't want you to do this. Why don't you check with them first?
Detonate the bomb.
Detonate the bomb.
Oh.
Oops.
Okay. So you've got a nasty hole in your wall.
If that bomb's so brilliant, why didn't it go off?
It is brilliant, but they aren't. They've spent the last 5 years building it, and they still haven't got it right. They're as stupid as any other organic life form. I hate them.
Influences from beyond. Radiation. Dust particles. Elders! Elders of Cricket! I need transportation. I need my friends. And I need them now.
But we need a hug.
Probability 1 to 1. We have normality. Deal with it.
I do miss the aroma of fresh pesto in a starship.
Come on, Arthur.
You cleaned that dressing gown.
I miss being connected to a war computer about as much as I'd miss the pain I feel in all the diodes down my left-hand side. Which is not at all.
We're in position at the dust cloud perimeter, folks.
Ready.
We should have drawn straws.
Hey, uncool and potentially risky. Suppose I drew the short one.
How do we know there's anything out there apart from a cloud of black dust?
I could tell you if you asked me politely, which you wouldn't.
Please, Marvin?
A pocket of pseudo-gravity has opened around the ship with an oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere.
We're being invited here. There's a very powerful intelligence at work.
Like you'd notice.
Eddie?
Airlock open, folks!
The last time I walked out of an airlock in deep space, the Vogons were pushing me. I can't believe I volunteered to do it again. Look, Trisha, if anything happens to us...
Listen!
I can't hear anything.
So, the pressure here is equal to the cabin pressure in the Heart of Gold.
And that suggests you're right about this?
I hope so. Haktar? Haktar! I would like you to meet my friend, Arthur Dent. I wanted to go off with the Thunder God, but he stopped me, and I really appreciate that. He made me realize where my affections really lay.
Is that actually relevant right now?
I'm not sure. Hello? Haktar?
Won't you both come out? I promise that you're perfectly safe.
By which people usually mean we're not.
Come on, Arthur.
But it's empty space.
Have faith.
I do. I also have fear and a propensity to bruising.
I have nothing to offer you by way of hospitality but tricks of the light. It is possible to be comfortable with tricks of the light, though, if that is all you have.
Good grief. It's a sofa. The sofa. The one that Ford and I escaped from prehistoric Earth on. Why does the universe keep doing these insanely bewildering things to me?
Please, make yourselves comfortable.
Oh, yes, thank you.
It's like an old friend.
And I really must congratulate you on the accuracy of your deductions.
Well, I didn't deduce anything myself. I'm just here because I'm sort of interested in life, the universe, and everything.
That is something in which I, too, have an interest.
Well, we should have a chat about it sometime. Over a cup of tea. Impressive. I'll be mother then, shall I? Oh.
I'm afraid the tea table is just a trick of the light.
Haktar, if the universe interests you so much, Why do you feel you have to destroy it?
Oh, dear. Perhaps a psychiatrist's couch would have served us better.
Oh, I think I preferred the sofa. Thank you.
Can you construct real things, too? I mean, solid objects.
You are thinking of the spaceship. Yes, I can. But it takes enormous effort and time. All I can do in my particle state, you see, is encourage and suggest. Tiny pieces of space debris, a few molecules here, a few hydrogen atoms there. I encourage them together. I can tease them into shape, but it takes many eons.
So, did you make the wrecked spacecraft that crashed on Cricket?
It seemed the best thing to do.
Best?
I repented, you see, for sabotaging my own design for the Silastic armor fiends. It was not my place to make such decisions. I was created to fulfill a function, and I failed in it. I negated my own existence.
Go on.
I deliberately nurtured the planet of Cricket till they would arrive at the same state of mind as the people who built me and require of me the design of the bomb I failed to make the first time. I wrapped myself around the planet and coddled it. Under the influence of events I was able to generate, they learned to hate like maniacs. Mind you, I had to make them live in the sky, on the ground. My influences were too weak.
You've caused the deaths of millions.
When they were locked away from me in the envelope of slow time, their responses became very confused, and they were unable to manage.
Which is why their bomb was a dud.
I was only trying to fulfill my function.
Nothing else?
Well, there was also the little matter of revenge. Of course, I was pulverized, then left in a crippled and semi-impotent state for billions of years. And there's nothing quite like wiping out the universe to get your point across.
You know what we have to do?
Yes, you're going to disperse me. This is your function, to destroy my consciousness. Well, be my guest. After all these eons, all I crave is oblivion. If I haven't already fulfilled my function, then it's too late. Data ends. Thank you.
Arthur?
And good night.
The atmosphere pocket is dissipating.
And the sofa's disappearing. Joe! Eddie, the vibration field. Quickly!
No problem!
That should take care of the dust cloud.
Listen.
I have fulfilled my function.
It's Hector.
I have fulfilled my function.
I think he's glad to have the burden of existence lifted.
Some people have all the luck.
I have fulfilled my function.
Well, that would appear to be that. Just about.
Just about?
I think we should take the ashes back to Lord's. I feel that very strongly.
Some charred bits of Cricket stump? Why?
It's a matter of national pride. I'm not sure you'd understand.
Are you proposing the injudicious use of time travel?
Homesick monkey man.
If we give them back moments after they were stolen, no one will be any the wiser.
Why bother? The Earth gets blown up a day later, no matter what you do.
It just seems important to do it. We'd only have to travel back a day or so in time.
This is precisely the sort of gratuitous and irresponsible mucking about that the Campaign for Real Time is trying to put a stop to.
Ah, But you try and explain that to the MCC.
I won't be a party to it. Kindly return me to the starship Bistromouth at once.
Okay, old man. Keep your beard on. We'll drop you off. You and the guy I picked up on the way over.
What guy?
Says his name is Prak. He's on the run from the Argabuthon Witness Protection Program.
Prak? The Prak?
He keeps talking nonstop. Doesn't make much sense.
Trillian, are you all right?
It was in the Sidereal Daily Mention, a big story. He wouldn't give evidence at some trial, so they administered a new truth drug just when the cricket robots broke in and stole the Argabuthon Scepter of Justice.
The Perspex Pillar of Science.
In the chaos, the bailiff accidentally gave Prak 10 times the maximum dose. Once the trial resumed, they made the worst request imaginable of someone in Prak's condition. They asked him to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And he told it. For all they know, he's still telling it. Strange, terrible things. Things that would drive you mad.
Yeah, if a little knowledge is a dangerous thing, omniscience must be lethal.
But if he knows all truth, then presumably he'd know what the ultimate question to the ultimate answer is. It's always bothered me that we never found out.
Yeah? Well, it's your call.
No!
Let's ask him.
Thank Zarquan, the hole soundproof. This motormouth can really ratchet.
Poor thing.
Door. Open. My pleasure to allow you admittance to the hole.
Hello?
Oh, hello. Do you have a cigarette?
Sorry, no.
Hi, pal. What's going on?
Nothing.
Oh. We thought you'd be still telling the truth. Whole and nothing but.
Oh, that? I was, but then I finished.
Really?
But not nearly as much of it as people imagine. Some of it is pretty funny, though.
Tell me about it.
Oh, I can't remember any of it now. I thought of writing some of it down, but then I thought, why bother?
Hey, buddy. You okay?
I'm not sure I haven't done myself an injury.
You remember none of it?
No. Oh, except most of the good bits were about frogs. Remember that?
Oh, do you? Frogs
were... You wouldn't believe some of the things about frogs. Come on, let's go and find ourselves a frog. Boy, will I ever see them in a new light.
Nothing more profound?
No, let's go and find a frog I can laugh at. Oh, a tadpole would... No, I can't. Sorry, who are you?
My name is Trillian.
Uh-huh.
A Ford prefect.
Oh, yeah.
And I am Seyfarth Beeblebrox.
So what? And what's this?
Me? Oh, my name's Arthur Dent.
No kidding. Well, you're Arthur Dent? Well, the Arthur Dent?
Blimey! You!
What?
Arthur Dent, you... You really...
You just leave the frog standing.
He's not well. The constant laughing's wrecked his body.
Oh. You wanted to ask me something.
How do you know that?
Because it's true.
Well, I did have a question. Or rather, what I actually have is an answer. I wanted to know what the question was. Well, the question I would like to know is the ultimate question of life, the universe and everything.
Yeah.
All we know is that the answer is 42, which is a little aggravating.
Mm-hmm.
42?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know. Yes, the question and the answer are mutually exclusive, I'm afraid. Knowledge of one logically precludes knowledge of the other. It is impossible that both can ever be known about in the same universe.
Oh.
Yeah.
Except if it happened, it seems that the question and the answer would just cancel each other out. Oh, and take the universe with them, which would then be replaced by something even more bizarrely inexplicable. It is possible, of course, that this has already happened, but there is a certain amount of uncertainty about it.
There certainly is. Yeah. I was just hoping there might have been some sort of reason.
Well, actually, there is one other thing I can remember. Apart from the frogs. Later. What was it? Oh, yes. God's last message to his creation. Would you like to know what it is?
Ford? What?
Look, do you want to know about it or not?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, all right.
Well, if you're that interested, I suggest you go and look for it. It is written in 30-foot-high letters of fire on top of the Quentulus Quasgar Mountains in the land of Savorbiopstri on the planet Preliumtan, third out from the sun's arse in galactic sector QQ7, active J Gamma. It is guarded by the logistic Vantracel of Lob.
It's where?
It is written in 30-foot-high letters of fire on top of the Quentulus Quasgar Mountains in the land of Savorbiopstri on the planet Preliumtan. You might want to write this down. Third out...
Which mountains?
The Quentulus Quasgar Mountains in the land of Savorbiopstri on the planet...
Have you got a pencil?
Me?
Which land was that? I didn't quite catch it.
Savorbiopstri on the planet...
Savorbiopstri?
Well, for heaven's sake...
Oh, poor thing. It was too much for him.
Bummer.
How about it, Arthur? Want to go in search of God's last message to his creation?
Not just now, thanks.
Fair enough.
One of the many problems encountered in time travel is not that of accidentally becoming your own father or mother. There's no problem involved in becoming your own father or mother that a broad-minded and well-adjusted family can't cope with. There is also no problem about changing the course of history. The course of history does not change, because it all fits together like a jigsaw. All the important changes have happened before the things they were supposed to change, and it all sorts itself out in the end. The major problem posed by time travel is quite simply one of grammar. And the main work to consult in this matter is Dr. Dan Streetmenschner's Time Traveler's Handbook of 1001 Tense Formations. It tells, for instance, how to describe something that was about to happen to you in the past before you time jump forward a couple of days in order to avoid it. The event will be described differently according to whether you're talking about it from the standpoint of your own natural time, from a time in the further future, or a time in the further past, which is further complicated by the possibility of conducting conversations whilst you're actually travelling from one time to another with the intention of becoming your own father or mother. Streetmenschner's handbook is as exhaustive as it is exhausting. But as no reader has yet been known to get as far as the future semi-conditionally modified sub-inverted plagal past subjunctive intentional without giving up, in later editions of the book, all the pages beyond this point have been left blank to save on printing costs. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy skips lightly over this tangle of academic abstraction, pausing only to note that the term future perfect has been abandoned, since it will have been discovered not to be.
How's that? LPW. Your legs, please.
Well, Fred, the Supernatural Brigade are certainly out in force here at Lord's today.
I don't know what is going off. You never got lethal white robots setting fire to the stands at a Yorkshire match, Henry. Not in my day, and certainly not without a stiff argument from the groundsman.
Too true, too true. The pitch here is blackened, lightly smoking towards square leg, and two men have just materialised on the pitch. Good Lord, I think I'm having a déjà vu.
Then I'll have a pint if you're buying.
And for listeners just joining us for today's play, 10 bat-wielding robots have returned to their spaceship, leaving behind them a scene of unutterable chaos.
Hello? Excuse me? There's nothing to worry about. I have the ashes. They're safe in this bag.
I don't think you have their attention.
I have also helped save the universe. You'd think that'd be a crowd pleaser.
Not anymore.
Excuse me, officer.
What seems to be the problem?
The ashes. I've got them. They were stolen by the white robots a moment ago. They were part of the key to the slow time envelope, you see, and, well, you can guess the rest. The point is, I've got them, and where should I put them,
I could tell you where to put them, son, but I'm on duty.
Pillock. Is no one interested?
Shall we go now?
I suppose. No. Hang on. This is Lord's Cricket Ground, yes?
What's left of it?
When I was a boy, I loved cricket.
Can we go now?
And I always dreamed, stupidly I know, that one day I would bowl at Lord's. And as I still have the ball I caught last time we were here...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and one of the batsmen is still standing at the crease.
Mm.
Would anyone mind if I...
Okay, get on with it. I'll be over there, the bored-looking one.
You're a pal. Okay, if I bowl you one.
Yes.
Arthur, what are you doing?
Polishing.
Shiny enough, surely. The trousers, I mean.
Quiet, Ford. I'm going into my run-up.
Right. Arthur!
Pitch down the leg side.
Arthur, that's not an England batsman, it's a cricket robot.
Line and length.
That's not a cricket ball, it's a supernova bomb, and I bet it's not a dud either.
I have made a few things. What's done is done.
Hector!
Arthur!
Stop! I can't. Something's making me run. I have to bowl at the robot.
I have fulfilled my function.
How good were you at cricket?
Dreadful! Right arm over, and... too late!
Wide!
All yours, Ford!
Yes!
Well held! Excuse me, you're back. May I? And Dent breaks his duck as the robot's head soars over the boundary for six.
Nice stroke.
Not bad, off the back foot. Right. Do we have time for tea?
That rather depends what you mean.
Hot, brown, liquidy stuff?
On what you mean by time. If you mean time, as in linear units yet to elapse before our inevitable mortality, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you meant time, as in the metaphysical bond between space and reality,
mm-hmm.
say, here, and the Vogon's imminent arrival,
oh dear.
That's several other things.
What, apart from a refreshing drink and a hot bath, does the future hold for Arthur Dent? Will his budding relationship with Trillian bear fruit? Can he ever return to the life he left behind on Earth? And who will attempt to assassinate him when he visits Stavromula Beta? All these questions must be answered in the free upgrade, which forms the next series of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Suppose it also depends what we mean by tea.
Precisely. Mm. You know what caterers are.
Uh-huh.
There's an interesting entry under tannin in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In the last part of this series of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, William Franklin was the book. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect, Mark Wing Davies, Aphod Beeblebrox, Susan Sheridan, Trillian, Stephen Moore, Marvin, Dominic Hawksley, the Elder of Cricket, and Richard Griffiths was Slarty Bartfast. Roger Gregg played Eddie, Bob Golding, the Cricket Civilian, Toby Longworth, Wow Bagger, and Henry Blofeld and Fred Truman were themselves. Chris Langan played Prack, and Leslie Phillips was Hector. The announcer was John Marsh. The surround mix was by Paul Dealey, and the live FX by Ken Humphrey. The script editor was John Langdon, and the music was by Paul Wicks Wickens. The production assistants were Laura Harris and Joe Wheeler. The programme was adapted, directed, and co-produced by Dirk Maggs. The producers were Helen Chatwell and Bruce Hyman, and it was an above-the-title production for BBC Radio 4.
Wait a minute!
What now?
Suffering Zarquan, and what planet are you from?
Shut up, mortal. I'll get to you later. Arthur Dent. Arthur Philip Dent.
Yes?
You are a...
Yes?
You're a... I've done you before, haven't I?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's my afternoon knackered.
The preceding programme contains violent scenes of a graphic nature which may cause offence. Time travellers of a nervous disposition may like to consider listening to something else for the past half hour.